This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Welcome to the Pixel People Podcast, where we go beyond the quest lines to discover the backstories and motivations of our favorite video game NPCs to better understand them and ourselves. I'm Amelia, also known as Fire Rider, and each episode I'm chatting with a special guest about a character they find particularly interesting. Since we're taking a close look at how these characters impact the story, please be aware that spoilers are likely. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hey, so before we dive in, I just wanted to share with you real quick that I now have a Patreon. I have no plans to include corporate advertising on the show, so if you'd like to support what I'm doing here, I hope you'll check it out. I've got some great rewards at every level, including, for Tier 2 and Tier 3 subscribers, an invitation to record and send me your thoughts about a character I've covered on the show to be included in a future episode. Check it out at patreon.com/firerider, and you can find the link in the show notes. Thanks so much for being a listener. On with the show. Welcome to Pixel People. I'm Amelia, aka Fire Rider, and my guest today works in digital media for a special educational needs and disabilities college by day, and is a streamer and content creator by night. He's the host of Tapes from the Wastes, a Fallout podcast, and a team member at First Aid Spray, a Resident Evil community. He's also a retro gaming collector, and recently launched a new podcast with a friend he met online during the pandemic. On top of all of that, he's also a father of one, which takes up most of his time outside work. Kelsey, or KDB, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. Hello.
Hello, I'm so glad to have you.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be here. Like, we were sort of just talking a minute ago, but I absolutely love the podcast and a little bit nervous. Aww. I don't want to let you down. You know, this is an exciting opportunity to talk about a character that I love, and I love the podcast. So yes, thanks so much.
I'm not even remotely worried about you letting me down, because I have listened to your shows and they are fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's so kind of you to say.
It's nice to talk. You know, it's always nice when you get somebody who's like, well, they podcast too. This will be fine. Yeah.
No worries. Yeah, I'm a professional. Not.
You're a professional. Yeah, I'll try to claim that role, but I'm like, no, not even remotely professional, no. So, tell everyone, who are we discussing today?
Okay, so, today. So, it's funny, I'd spent a bit of time trying to think way back when we were first talking about this, who I might talk about today, and I really struggled. I don't know why I struggled, because once I realized who I wanted to talk about, it was just kind of like, you know, you kick yourself and you're like, of course I want to talk about this character. And so yeah, today I want to talk about the boss from the Metal Gear Solid series, and in particular, the boss, her appearance in Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater.
Excellent. So my disclaimer here, this is not a game that I have played. Mm-hmm. So I had a really interesting conversation just a little bit ago too about some of the reasons why some games kind of I miss, and a lot of times it has to do with title, where sure. I will see a title and be like, okay, this is a dude bro game, this game is not for me. And I was informed that I was incredibly wrong. And I should probably check my prejudice, which is fair and correct.
It's completely fair enough to think that. And, I mean, like, you know, this... the reputation of these games sometimes is because they can be so incredibly complicated. Mm-hmm. Their reputations can be quite weird. They're all quite different as well. And this, as far as the Metal Gear games go, this one in particular is sort of often called the best one in the series, particularly for story. And but I understand when people have a sort of judgment towards these things. But I fully encourage, if you like kind of science fiction and maybe things with a bit of politics thrown in, and there's even like a
scientist sci-fi games with politics. Well, I hate games like that. And anybody who knows me is like, okay.
So yeah, they can be quite kind of complicated, but I fully encourage people to sort of take the time and play it if they can. I'm to talk about this game or to talk about this character, I will I mean, I'm gonna have to spoil it if that's okay, because that's,
yeah, absolutely. Like I usually say, you know, it's actually worked right into the intro of the show, the opening intro, that spoilers are gonna happen. Yeah. So it's impossible to talk about, you know, a good character without and really dig into their story without spoiling things. That's just what's gonna happen. So, you know, if you fear spoilers, go play the game first and then come back. That's cool. We'll be here. if you've played the game already, plow on. If you don't mind spoilers, plow on. That's kind of my policy.
Yes. Yeah. Let's plow on. Definitely.
Plow on.
Now, and some things you can talk about maybe without spoiling, but this one in particular, like the character is so specifically based around like an end reveal that, that we have to talk about it. So, I mean, I think it's important to give a little bit of a backstory of the character, because she appears in this game and her backstory is incredibly in depth, and I won't go into every last detail, but just so people can get an idea sort of going in who she is and what she's been through. This is stuff that you find out throughout the game, obviously. But yeah, I just want to put, that sort of out here now. So I'll do that. And I mean, I'll start with the name. The boss obviously sounds like an odd name. This was actually just like a moniker she gained at some point in her life. It's kind of unspecified when, but she had many high ranking roles in the military and as leader of certain groups. And she was effectively like an American soldier and a secret agent. And yeah, it's never been confirmed what her actual name is. She also has she has a few other nicknames, the Joy, the Mother of Special Forces, and Mercury Lady. And I'll sort of talk about why those names are there in a bit. She was born in the 1920s as a child to a member of this, I suppose, like shadowy global group known as the Wise Men's Committee. And these were made up of wealthy people from all around, from the biggest nations in the world. So like China, US and Russia. And they sort of evolved into this other group of people called the Philosophers. As for the boss in the Metal Gear universe, she played as kind of a secret role in key military events through history. In World War II, she took part in missions where they would snatch high-ranking officials from the enemy and interrogate them to find out information. She helped develop this unique form of, I was going to say martial arts, that's the wrong term. It's called close quarters combat, or CQC for short, where she could like strip enemies of their weapons and break bones in seconds. She founded this special forces unit known as the Cobras, and they also undertook many missions in World War II. And they all have these kind of interesting nicknames based on the emotions that they take into battle. So we have the pain, the fear, the end, the fury, and the sorrow. And the sorrow would actually be somebody that the boss would later develop a relationship with. And they all saw her as kind of like a mother figure. And it was around that time that she gained the Mother of Special Forces nickname that I mentioned.
Interesting.
And so through all this sort of through World War II, she discovered that she was pregnant, and this caused her in her eyes to fail one of her assassination missions. She was actually grazed by a bullet to the head, which put her in this 3-month coma. But she survived, and the baby survived, and committed as ever, she went back to war despite being heavily pregnant. And in the universe, it's said that so on the D-Day landings, she was part of that, and she was actually shot in the gut, but this sent her into labor on the battlefield.
Okay, so they sent like a full-on, like 9 months pregnant woman in on D-Day.
So she is, what will become apparent is the boss is so kind of unbelievably, and maybe to her own detriment, committed to her loyalty and sort of her role, which changes drastically sort of, you know, in a period of time coming up. But yeah, so she was like, no, I'm going back out there. She gave birth on the battlefield, and this baby was taken away by the Philosophers, this group of people that I mentioned. And then after that, in the lead up to the Cold War, she was helping the US government with secret projects. She was working with them in Nevada at one point, where they did testing for nukes and radiation. She was exposed to radiation, which made her infertile. And so she moved away from those experiments and moved into a training camp where she met a teenager named John. He also goes by the nickname Jack. I've never understood why Jack is a nickname for John, but it's one of those.
It's really common, yeah. I know, it's like they're the same length. I don't get the
yeah. But anyway.
So
Jack, aka John, so this is in fact Snake, who is the lead character from MGS3. And she trains him for like a decade, teaches him CQC, and they develop this kind of incredibly deep mother-son type relationship. And then after this, she goes back to some missions for the government, and it's here where her relationship with the government and the CIA kind of turns a bit sour. So, in the universe of Metal Gear, Russia, you know, it's almost like a hyper-real universe. They have events that happen in our timeline in the real world, but then other stuff happens. So
yeah, so like when I was looking it up, it looked like I couldn't quite tell. So is this like an alternate universe kind of idea, or is it more like a divergence, like you see in Fallout, where it's like real up to here, and then the timeline goes off in another direction? Or yeah, is it just completely different but similar? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
the sort of the timeline for Metal Gear only really goes back to, and it sort of changes here and there as well. You know, people talk about what's canon. There's other games and things like that. But it really only goes back to this time when the Wise Men's Committee was created. So this is like early 1900s, and that's where its history kind of starts. It's just assumed that it is... I suppose you could say it's either, really. I mean, maybe everything was the same up until that point, and then it split off. But it's closer to our timeline than something like Fallout is. So what was happening? So Russia sent Sputnik into space, and then this obviously ramped up the space race between USA and Soviet Union. Government threw everything they had at this project called the Mercury Project, and the boss was selected to take part in this. And she was, this isn't in the official history books, but she was unofficially the first human sent into space. And so it's at this point where she's up in space, and she looks out the window of the sort of capsule that she's in, and she sees the Earth, and she has this big awakening, and she realizes how petty war is, and how all this fighting that she sort of dedicated her life to, just kind of how stupid it is, really. And she sees the Earth and the human race as one. And so it's in that moment where she's like, okay, things are changing, you know, things need to change. And, you know, and this sets her on a path towards where the game begins. So her pod crash lands, and this actually causes her to go into another coma, and she gets quite injured, and her relationship with she's been through a lot. And this is why I wanted to lay all this out, because what it would get to, it sort of it maybe will help you sort of understand why it sort of means so much to me, if you like. So she gets injured, her relationship with the government falls apart again, and she then goes to work with the philosophers, and they send her on a mission where she has to assassinate the Sorrow, who is the father of her child, because they see these two people as like the two most powerful soldiers on Earth, and they only want one of them to be around, because the philosophers kind of fear their own plans being overthrown. So she does that, and she assassinates the Sorrow. And then after that, she's contacted by an old colleague called Major Zero, and he invites her to rejoin the CIA and form the Fox Unit. And so this now takes us to, here we are, this is Metal Gear Solid 3, this is where it begins. And for those who've played the game, so Snake, the character, he arrives in the Soviet Union, and that's where we start the game.
So all of this took place before the game.
It is. It's so... And the Metal Gear games have a habit of having these long cutscenes and long story dumps, if you like. Characters give big speeches where they talk about stuff that happened in the past and things like
that. I love that stuff.
Yeah, and some people don't. And I really, really do love that stuff. And you know, I don't kind of profess to be an expert on the Metal Gear lore, if you like. I'm certainly... I'm well versed in it, and you know, I'm really into it, and more than sort of the average player might be, but it's so in depth that there's stuff that even goes over my head, to be honest. So
wow.
But Yeah, so that's kind of her backstory leading us up into the game.
Okay.
And in the game itself, initially she starts out, she's on the radio. You know, Snake realizes that his mentor from all these years ago is there to help him out, and she's helping you with, you know, just giving you advice, and you can call her on the radio for tips about where to go and what to do. And Snake is, you're playing as Snake and the boss is on the radio.
So Snake is Jack.
Snake is Jack, yeah, this teenager that she trained.
Got it.
And he, she gives you little tips and things and says little stories. Oh, remember when I taught you this and taught you that? And they sort of, this mother-son relationship is really apparent between them. And then as you're playing the game, I think it's probably maybe about the first... I have a funny story quickly about when I first played this game. I was like, oh, wow, this is great and everything. And I think I got like maybe 3 hours into it. And then the opening credits rolled. And I was just like, what?
Oh, my God.
And
oh my God.
I will never forget that moment because, you know, there's games with long intros, but this game has like an entire game as its intro. And
that is amazing.
So you're playing this first section of the game, and then all of a sudden, just to set the scene, so you're in the Soviet Union and your mission is to, you're going to rescue this scientist, this nuclear physicist who you want to bring back to the United States with you. Mm-hmm. Which you do, you find him, and then all of a sudden the boss is there. You arrive on this bridge, which is like really high up above this ravine, and the boss appears, and obviously Snake is confused. What are you doing here? You're supposed to be... She was actually supposed to be on a submarine in the Antarctic. That's where she was supposed to be radioing from. And it's revealed that no, she's there. She's right in front of him. And this obviously this catches him off guard completely. And she says she's defecting to the Soviet Union. And he can't be here. He has to hand over the scientist, basically, or he dies. And so this person who's been helping you for these first few hours is suddenly now saying that they're defecting and looks like that you're in real trouble.
Wow.
And she basically reveals that, yeah, she's working with this rogue group within the Soviet Union that wants to overthrow the Soviet Union, and they have a couple of recoilless nuclear warheads that they can just fire themselves, and they're going to hold the world hostage, basically. And then from there, so she throws Snake off a bridge. He falls down into the ravine, gets injured, but he survives, and then the game presses on. And then from there, you spend the game trying to take down her reformed Cobra unit that I mentioned, the Fury, the Pain, and all those folks. And the boss doesn't appear much in the game from then on. She has like three big scenes. So there's that one that I just mentioned. And then just over halfway through the game, there's this it's a torture scene where she sort of really shows her authority among the other sort of antagonists that are in the game, and it's clear that everybody fears her. She's this really big presence, she's in charge, they're all following the boss. Again, she's like the mother of these people here.
Yeah.
And then you don't see her again until the finale of the game. So Snake has taken down the Cobra unit, he's destroyed this they've got this big, so Metal Gear is a term for these big sort of tank-like machines that can fire nukes and stuff like that. And there's a different one in every game. So he destroys the Metal Gear of this game, and he looks like he's about to escape. And then all of a sudden he wanders into this field and the boss is there. And she has this big speech where she talks to Snake about being up in space and seeing the world, you know, in a different light.
Yeah.
Seeing that she wants to unite the human race, you know, this classic speech that the villain always gives. She says she wants to get rid of capitalism and communism, and she sort of makes all these great points, but she's because she's basically saying she's going to hold the world hostage to do it, it's like, well, okay, that's kind of quite mad. And it comes off not as maybe the right way to do. And she says about how she's given up her child and, you know, the chance to have more children or just any kind of normal life of some kind. And she accepts that it's her destiny to sort of do this. And as I say, she's going to have to hold the world hostage. But and she tells Snake that she, you know, his life has led to this day, and she's sort of pushing his buttons quite a lot in this big long speech. This is like 25 minutes of sort of speech that she gives in the game. And she demands that he faces her in this fight to the death. And if he doesn't, these planes are going to bomb the site in 10 minutes. So if you don't face her, you're both going to die and all this kind of stuff.
Wow.
So then in the game, so you have this in-game battle with the boss and you take her down. And she hands Snake this piece of microfilm, tells him to keep it safe. But then she's like, okay, I'm ready now, you know, kill me. This is it. This is the end. Mm. And so Snake does. He basically pulls the trigger and he ends her life. And then, so this leads you into the very end of the game. There's like a couple of other little bits you've got to do. But when it comes to the sort of final cutscene and the plot reveal, there's this big plot twist that, so it turns out she was never actually defecting to the Soviet Union. What she was trying to do, there's this informant that basically tells this story, and she says she was actually trying to infiltrate this rogue group that I mentioned that were going to overthrow. And I understand this. There's probably some people out there thinking, God, I'm not even sure I can follow this story. It is complicated. I appreciate it.
That is what I've been told. That everything about Metal Gear is like it's a very complex, convoluted, convoluted negative, but like, you know, there's a lot going on. And even just, you know, from what you've been saying about her so far, there's like, there is so much going on and that's just one character. That's incredible.
Exactly. This is what I mean. There's like 10 other characters in the game that we just don't even have time to even talk about. Right. So I'm trying to keep it as this sort of debrief on the story as concise as I can. But this informant reveals that she, she was never defecting. She was going to infiltrate this group and take this thing called the Philosopher's Legacy, which is this microfilm that I mentioned that just basically has access to loads of money and stuff like that, which she believes was going to help her group that she was going to actually leave with to sort of distribute wealth around the world and stuff like this. But what happened is way back in the beginning when I mentioned you first meet her on that bridge. So just after that, one of the other antagonists, this guy called Colonel Volgin, he takes one of the recoilless nuclear warheads that they have and he fires it at the base that you were just at and he blows it up. And this was like an unexpected event that nobody, you know, everybody thinks nobody's crazy enough to actually launch one of these things. You know, this is serious, but he just does it just because this guy is insane. And that's his way of sort of sending a message. And so when he did that, this basically, you know, this rung the alarm bells for the Soviet Union, and they realized that a American-made nuclear warhead was launched in their country.
Oh my God.
And they obviously get on the phone to the United States, like, what the hell's going on? And so in order for the United States to be proven innocent, they basically had to let go of the boss and say, you know, this is a rogue agent. She's nothing to do with us. And the boss knows this. And the boss knows that the only way that sort of all out nuclear war won't happen in the world is if she dies at the hands of Snake, who is obviously there to take her out and prove that America wasn't involved, you know, even though they were. And so this informant reveals all that and reveals that in order to save the world from nuclear war, America can't take the blame. So she had to be taken out. And then this kind of sends Snake onto his final transition into, after this, he earns the boss moniker because he's the one that took out the other boss. And they call him Big Boss. This is his nickname that he gets. And he spends the rest of his life trying to bring peace to the world based on the original boss's vision. And then those who know the story of the games will know that it doesn't quite turn out that way. But
it never does.
No. I mean, you know, that's it's really it in a nutshell.
I mean, it sounds so, you know, like we were saying, very complex and, you know, kind of convoluted and back and forth. But if you think about, like, you know, the history of the world in the, you know, mid-50s to early 60s with, there was a lot of shit going on. Yep. And, you know, and there was, you know, a lot of this back and forth and a lot of, you know, close calls and, you know, really scary moments. And, you know, I mean, this is, you know, before my time, but, you know, my father certainly knows a lot about it and, you know, can talk on it. You know, this, this was the setting of his childhood and his teenage years. And, so even as complex and strange as it seems, and even, you know, like little conspiracy theorists and stuff like that, all of that stuff was going on.
It certainly was. And I think I've mentioned before when I've had conversations about Fallout, like the stuff that kind of really, that like I'm a big horror movie fan, but and horror movies can scare me, but not in a way that stories like this and Fallout can, because it's so closer to our own reality. And like you say, this stuff happened. And my dad went to sleep at night thinking, oh, the nukes might be launched tomorrow.
Right.
Like that was like a real thing that was happening. And that affected the world and it affected people in ways that today we don't really understand. And I mean, it's still there. It's sort of,
we've
it's
had
always
our moments.
There.
Like, do you remember, it was the very beginning of 2020 in like January of 2020. There was like this, I mean, it seems like nothing compared to the rest of how 2020 went, but there was this like 2 week period where it really seemed like we were about to go to war with Iran.
Yeah, I remember. And that was exactly, it's just this small little insight. It's this reminder that this stuff is out there and it's, and stuff is messed up. You know, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here, by the way.
Oh God, but, yeah, go for
I was going to say fucked
up. I just mark it as explicit, move on, you know?
And yeah, so this stuff does, it terrifies me and it upsets me. And I think about, you know, my own family and things like that. So Fallout and Metal Gear share that same basis in the threat of nuclear war and what that means and stuff. So I think that's probably why I enjoy them both.
Well, I feel like those are the games that really capture me too. Because, you know, I mean, not having played Metal Gear, but, you know, speaking toward Fallout and other games that, you know, catch me in that same way is how real they feel.
Yep.
And a lot of that is due to the setting, but a lot of that is also due to the characters and how real they make the characters, you know.
Yeah.
And even though the boss, she sounds like kind of this big, you know, kind of archetype where all of these different things have happened, but at the same time, it sounds like she feels very real and very vulnerable and like an antagonist that you can completely understand her motives. And even if you disagree with her methods, you know, you get where she's coming from.
No, I completely agree. And this is the weird thing about this game. And I do hope, like I said, that I haven't spoiled it. I would rather people had played it first before listening to me butcher the story. But it's like you, when you first play this story through, and it's not just, I mean, it is just her character really that causes you to think about it this way. You know, your appreciation for this story and your appreciation for this character cannot be fulfilled properly. It cannot be sort of truly accurate until you play it a second time. And then you see this whole time, everything she says is about guiding Snake and helping him. Like, whereas the first time you think this crazy, you know, this crazy person is just, you know, she wants to nuke the world or whatever. But no, you play it again with the context of actually what she was doing. And it's just, it is.
I felt like that on a few games where the second playthrough is just much more. You just get so much more out of it. And it's like, okay, it's like the big reveals have been spoiled, But then you can see all the clues that lead up to it, and you see like all the writing work that really went into it, and just get that deep, deep appreciation for it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And Hideo Kojima, the director, is sort of known for this. Like, he's a big movie fan, and he is about story more. What's crazy is he's so into story, you think, how could the gameplay possibly be as good? But it is. You know, these games have built up a reputation for being incredibly good, and they push the boundaries of what's possible of the system they're on at the time, and attention to detail and things like that. And you know, Kojima's sort of love for Hollywood, and particularly with this game, it's very James Bondy, and I'm not even really a fan of James Bond, but it just, the whole secret agent stuff is such a big thing.
Yeah,
in this game.
I really got that feel, and I remember because I was familiar with the theme from it because I listened to a lot of like video game soundtracks like while I'm working, and this was one that came up on like Video Games Live or something, and the theme sounds like a Bond song.
It does, yeah. There's a couple of songs on the soundtrack that are just, you know, it sounds like the opening credits to a Bond film. And my God, like, I could do a whole another podcast on the soundtrack to this game. So I won't get on a sort of a roll about that. But what was I going to say? I know sort of another thing you mentioned before is you say what kind of drew you to this character initially.
Yeah.
And I sort of, now I've dumped all that story on you, I can kind of open up a bit more about that. But I think a lot of people will agree with me on this, and you know, some people may not, but the one of the biggest things about this character is her voice. Like, so she is voiced by a voice actor called Laurie Allen, and she's not done a great deal of stuff. She is, outside of this game, she is most well known as the newsreader on Family Guy. And
oh my
I don't know
God.
Family Guy, so she's, you know, she's, this is like a low supporting character that appears every few episodes and makes a few quirky remarks. And but her voice, her performance in this game, her voice, obviously her voice work really gets to shine through, and it's this kind of, like, I was trying to think of ways to describe it, and it is so difficult, but it's very dreamlike. It's very, it's soft spoken, but there's so much authority and assurance behind every single word that comes out of her mouth. And I think she's one of these people where, you know, you sometimes meet people and you're like, hey, you kind of sound like somebody else I know and stuff like this, and it's kind of funny, people have similar voices. And this voice actor has a voice that you will not hear anywhere else, and it is so unique. And when I think about when I first played the game, it was just like, wow, her voice stands out more than anybody else. And the guy who plays Snake, David Hayter, is sort of very famous for his voice for Snake. And I just think he gets completely outshone in this game by Laurie Allen. And he'd probably say the same thing as well. So she completely just grabs you straight away with the sound of her voice. And then, yeah, I'm sort of playing. And then it's very early on, this motherly presence that she has is so apparent. And, you know, my relationship with my own mum is sort of, it's fine. Sometimes, as with lots of families, can be extremely difficult. And I think it would probably be quite naive of me to think that maybe I wasn't drawn to this character because of her presence as of like such an assured mother type character.
Yeah.
And you know, mums are kind of like very idealized, and when the relationship is good and they imprint on you before nobody else, and what they imprint on you can sort of often reflect what you're looking for later in life. And so when I think about, why does this character mean, why did she grab me so much, you know, it's a video game character, it doesn't mean as much to me as my real life friends family.
And then you're treading on dangerous ground.
I know. And I think about it, I'm like, wow, I actually care about this bunch of pixels. And it's so crazy, but it just, yeah. And she just seems like so experienced, and she's weirdly calm, but this powerful presence. You know, she takes down, you know, men twice her size, and she sort of really takes your breath away. And then, as I said, that first playthrough, she seems super evil. And then the reveal in the end is just like, oh my God, you know, she was making this complete ultimate sacrifice for Snake and yeah. allowing him to take the boss moniker and save the country or the world and have the chance at life that she thinks that she doesn't. And then like subsequent playthroughs, they're just, I play this game sort of every couple of years, maybe. I haven't played it for a couple of years now. I'm probably due a revisit, but subsequent playthroughs, you know, are always, that for me, they are difficult. And before this podcast, you know, I watched a couple of cutscenes on YouTube just to refresh my mind.
Yeah.
And my wife was with me watching one, and you know, like the end scene comes on and the music starts, and like I just feel myself welling up completely. And my wife sort of like, you know, my wife likes games to a point, but she has no idea sort of about my about this game really, and particularly my investment with it. And she sort of looks at me like, everything okay? I'm just like, I don't know, like it's something that this has stuck with me, this character has stuck with me more than I even realized, I think, until I started thinking about this podcast. And yeah, it is a I think about revisiting it, and I'm like, I don't know, I watch those cutscenes, I probably don't need to revisit it, because I don't want to stress myself out and get upset, because this, just everything she does is, it's like the biggest sacrifice you'll ever see in a game. And yeah. I'm not saying there aren't bigger ones, but again, because it's so based in reality and so relatable in that sense, it just, yeah, it's very affecting.
Hey guys, as you know, I'm part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, and I wanted to take a moment to introduce you to a couple of other great Rocket Club shows you'll want to check out.
How does the song Country Roads begin? Almost heaven, West Virginia, right? A lot has changed in Appalachia since the Scorch Plague, and it is far from heaven now. Far From Heaven, a Fallout 76 story, is a rich and immersive audio drama based upon the popular video game. With strong storytelling and fascinating characters from across many familiar factions, Far From Heaven is a podcast fans of the video game will love. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, Amazon, and many other great podcasting platforms. Far From Heaven, a Fallout 76 story, available now.
Your bestest girl Rose coming at you from top of the world. Now it's time for your local traffic and weather. Welp, looks like almost everyone's still dead, so traffic is at a standstill. And now a word from our sponsor, because they're totally not bribing me with massive amounts of chems or anything. Seems as the stuffed shirts are back at the White Springs playing games with that total loser Modus. But hey, if that's your thing, whatever. So if all you squares wanted to hear more totally sort of, but maybe not boring stories about rebuilding Appalachia and being all goody two-shoes, definitely not Raiders, check out this thing they call a podcast. The Modus Files, whatever that's supposed to be. On Spotify, iTunes, and wherever else you listen to those things. Double ugh. They're not paying me enough for this. Till later. This is Rose. Raiders rule!
Do you like League of Legends? Do you like Legends of Runeterra? Do you like anything set in the Runeterran universe? Well, in League of Lore, that is what we shall be discussing. I am Skullhead Soldiers, and this is a podcast about the lore of League of Legends and other properties set in the Runeterran universe. We'll be diving into each region, as well as all the champions that exist in this wonderful, crazy fantasy universe. And I hope to see you all there.
I love what you said, too, about, like, the music. I mean, it's so funny because I'll just be working and then like a particular piece will come on and it just takes me right to that moment in that game, you know, and I'll just be sitting there like,
yep.
It's like, I'm okay.
It is It's so mad what music can do for you. And, you know, that, again, yeah, like I said, that's a whole other conversation. But this game has lots of great music in it. The theme is sort of associated with the big reveal and stuff is it's so somber. It doesn't help that it's a sad piece of music. You know, you think, oh, this is just making me feel even more emotional. So, I struggled to listen to it. I love the first sort of few opening notes. And I'm like, yep, that's enough. I'll turn that off now.
It was funny. There was just on my Discord, my brother actually had posted a trailer for they're re-releasing like the early Final Fantasy games. And I clicked in and watched, and like it started in with like the theme, and I just started like falling to pieces because it was just so nostalgic. And, I love that music is a big part of this particular game. That always draws me to a game and really makes me want to dive in when the music has been as carefully done as this.
The composer is Harry Gregson Williams, who he's done movies as well, like Tony Scott movies and things like that. So this is a guy that sort of really knows what he's doing. And I read an interview with him once about how seriously he took these games, you know, because this was 2004 when this game came out, and I would argue
like PlayStation 2,
Yeah, that's right. And I would argue even in 2004, games were, despite being an incredibly lucrative business and selling hundreds of millions of copies, are still kind of looked down upon from artists outside of the gaming industry. And it only really is in more recent years where we've seen people kind of, defect is the wrong word, sort of move more into that world, you know, and high profile actors and composers and are getting involved with games. And so Williams was involved with this soundtrack. I think he did two of the games, actually. He did two Metal Gear games, and they're both superb soundtracks. And they are soundtracks, like you say, I will listen to outside of playing the game quite easily. They're really, really great. When you mentioned nostalgia, like I agree with that. That's nostalgia is this thing that I think for lots of us will always, you know, it can bring out, you know, certain emotions and all this kind of thing. And then with this one, for me, it is nostalgia related because I think about the time in my life when I was playing this game and what I was doing, you know. I think so. When I was playing, I just started college, you know. So the sort of you're meeting new people and all this kind of stuff. But this is a game where it's less about the nostalgia and it is more about this character. And I just think that's the thing that stands out with me. Not where I was at the time, it's the actions of this character, the things they say, the things that they do are stuff that I think about more than I would care to admit, to be honest. You know, you don't realize sometimes how often you think about these things. This stuff stays with you. And the boss has definitely stayed with me since day one.
Love that. So let's kind of dive into, so we had brought up loyalty earlier, and you said that loyalty is like the word for this particular character, that this is what she is all about. So I wanted to kind of dive into that a bit because it sounds like just from you kind of telling her story and kind of what I was looking up and stuff, I can see where she has there's loyalty, but it seems like there might also be a little bit of like toxic loyalty, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. So, so she obviously, and if I think about this character and what she's loyal to, I'm like, this is, you know, I've never been in the military and things like that. And I'm not, that's not something that I necessarily relate to. But for all the things we discussed, she, and this is why the first playthrough where you see she's being, it all seems toxic. It all seems, this loyalty is what is causing her to about to be murdered, basically, by her student. And it's just, it's sent her on this path, it's sent her mad and all this kind of stuff. But it isn't until, I think, the reveal where it comes to light that it's actually, she is so loyal to Jack, to Snake, that she knows that that he's there and that he's the one that has to take her down and, you know, clear the state's name. But before that happens, she outlines her entire, all these intentions that she has, which, as I said, makes sense, you know, uniting the world, world peace and all this kind of mm-hmm. stuff, because she knows that that's going to stay with him, because she knows that everything she says to him is he's listening, basically. And so her loyalty to him and wanting to protect him, she sees him as her child. She's so loyal to him that it costs her life. And so, I mean, it's toxic in that sense as well, I suppose. It's and this notion of loyalty is so weird to me, because it can be valuable, but it can be dangerous. And mm-hmm. people do things in the name of allegiance and loyalty that can conflict with decent, simple logic, you know? It's like trust, you know, this is loyalty, something that it can take years and years to earn and then can just be sort of smashed apart in seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to get back depending on the situations.
But then
I think in the case of my son, and I think like my loyalty to him is like a given, like he didn't have to earn that loyalty. Like it's just there. It just exists. And I've loyal to him from the moment he was conceived. Like it's just, and so when I think about the boss's story, I have so much respect for that aspect of her personality, because it just, for me, it just brings it all the way back to family. And, you know, this, my family could be strained at times, but now I have my own family. Yeah. You know, when I say my family could be strained, I mean, you know, my mom, my dad, my brothers, and but then now I have my own family, my wife and my son, and I have this chance to be loyal to them and kind of wear that as a badge that I can be proud of.
I can even, you know, I can speak to that as, because I think your child's pretty young, right?
Yeah, he's almost 3.
Okay, yeah. So, and you know, I can tell you, it sounds insane. It's going to get tested as he gets older, you know, and I haven't experienced that as much with my younger son, but I have experienced that with my older son, you know, where he's done things that I'm not okay with and that don't make me proud, you know, which hurts to say. I mean, that physically hurts to say that.
Yep.
But you have, but to take that, and I think that those are those moments too where, you know, you kind of, these are the moments that define parents, if you know what I mean, where a parent that is loyal to their child no matter what they do is a bad parent.
Yeah.
You know, and a parent who can step back and say, this is not okay and I don't support you in this, I think is a better parent. And it's like, you still love them, of course, you know, they're still your babies, and you still want the best, but you can't.
I completely agree. And this is why, you know, I talk about the relationship with my own family, and mm-hmm. my wife won't mind me saying, but she has like a sister that she's estranged from. Mm-hmm. And we talk to her parents a lot about that relationship. And it's like, how can you be loyal to this person, or how can you want to still do things after all this stuff that they've done, you know? And I don't need to spell it out for you, you know, people do terrible things and you think, you know, this, how could you still have this connection to them? But I'm doing my best to prepare for that, because, you know, you say he's going to get tested. He tests me now. He adds his back.
He's a toddler.
He's a toddler. So, yeah, my loyalty gets tested every day. I know it's going to get harder and harder. And then I think about, again, so just to bring it sort of back to the character, I think about her loyalty and sort of what that causes her to do. And she sort of weighs up all these things that have happened in her life and the choices that she has now. And it's like, she understands that destiny has sort of led her, and all the choices she has made have led her to this point. And so that's mm-hmm. why she knows she has to make that sacrifice, because it's like, well, you got yourself here. And so now what, you know, this guy who you trained, who was a teenager when you trained, and he's here now, you can either keep that loyalty to him intact because it's sort of the right thing to do, or you can just say, fuck it and let nuclear war sort of rage across the world. Yeah. And she makes what I feel is the right choice because of her allegiances to him rather than her country. Because, like I say, there's subsequent story and other games which show it's not about allegiance to the government or anything like that. It's about allegiance to people and good people and family, if you like. So
it sounds like that's really the ultimate lesson that she kind of has to go through. Because, I mean, when we're talking loyalty, she was so loyal to the cause and her the military and so forth that, you know, as we talked about, she went to D-Day, you know, full on 9 months pregnant. And it's like, who does that? That's nuts, you know?
Well, her child got taken away from her. And it's just, nothing good came from that. And it's a crazy thing to think of. Like I say, it makes people do things that aren't, they probably shouldn't do. And so that's why I say loyalty to me is this such, is such weird, unique notion, because it's like, I'm loyal to this.
You can use it so easily to manipulate too, you know, even if you're not on the side of, you know, the person who is loyal, to know that you have that loyalty is almost a dangerous thing, you know, to be very aware of it and to use it to, you know, I mean, even on very small scale, I mean, employers use that, you know, they really play, they lean into the whole, you know, we're a family, da 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 da, but it's like, okay, but, you know, they'll still throw you on your butt, you know, the minute that it's profitable for them. I'm not calling out anybody in particular. I'm just saying that this is a thing. You know what I mean?
You are completely right. You are completely right. And, you know, I've had conversations with people just about work and stuff, and I hear people getting very worked up about work, and I've said almost that exact thing that you've just said to people in the past. You know, these, the end of the day, there's people there that aren't your friends and stuff. I'm not saying you can't make friends at work. Of course you can. But this is as far as how it relates to us now in this world. It's like, there's situations where you think your loyalty will be used against you, and people will, they'll know basically how to push your buttons. Like, and, you know, like the boss does to Snake to make him go through with this. She knows. He's, you know, because he's like her, he's been trained to, he's a soldier as well, and he kind of breaks away from that eventually and becomes more sort of his own person, if you like. But that idea of being loyal is something that she knows he's very aware of, and she knows how to work around it. And I feel in the context, in the story of this game, she's doing the right thing, because, as I said, she prevents nuclear war, so that's quite good.
We're a fan.
And it took a lot to get her there, and she's so experienced and smart that she knows what to say that's gonna manipulate Snake into following through with it, if you like.
That's it's so relatable, you know. And that's always, you know, to me, what makes a really good game is how relatable it is. I mean, I know that's not true for everybody, but for me, it is.
And it's what I love playing games that are completely batshit crazy and have no relatability. You know, this is the thing about, you know, we have, it's just like food. You know, one day I want to eat this, one day I want to eat that. You know, but when I think about the stuff that really resonates with me, it's always the stuff that is just grounded in reality, and that's just the way it is. And I mean, you can have that, you can have fantasy that's grounded in reality if the characters are doing things and acting like you would and people you know would, and there's stuff that you can pick out. But if there's just absolute bonkersness all the time, then it's just not, it's just going to be so passive, and then you'll forget about it after you've finished it. So it makes makes for a better story and better characters. It's, I mean, that's such an obvious thing to say. Good characters are relatable. Of course they are. That's what it is. Oh, I sound so smart right now.
But, you know, I mean, just because it's true doesn't mean that, you know, it doesn't need to be said sometimes.
I think you're right. And this character is, just, it's it's weird. Like, I relate. I wonder if I relate to her, or do I relate to her certainly a lot of her values. I relate to the relationship, I think, between her and Snake. That's, like I say, it's like mother and son. It's pushing each other to the edge sometimes, and you know, what you think about being a parent. You know, what when you always want to teach your children the best things, the right things, but then they're also their own person, and then I think sometimes it can be hard for a parent to accept that that this person, although an extension of you, is not you. They are their own being, and you want them to do right by them. And I see this story, and I see it as the boss wanting to do right by Snake, and in the midst of this crazy sci-fi military story of nuclear war, it's those two people at the root of it, you know.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you so much for introducing me to this game and this absolutely fascinating character. There's so much here that, I'm pretty sure we could, like, talk for another 3 hours about her.
Yeah, we really could. As I said, it's almost difficult to do just this one conversation because I had to breeze over that story, and I'm in my head, I'm just like, oh, I didn't talk about this, I didn't talk about that, I didn't talk about that. And it's just like, you know, go play the game, you know, experience it, enjoy the story, because I think this is really one not to be missed. And as I said, even people who I know who aren't huge Metal Gear fans, but they've played this game, they're like, oh yeah, that game's incredible. The story is, but yeah, hopefully, as I said, hopefully I've sort of given you stuff to think about, and given people stuff to think about. This, I love this character. She's like a mother to me, I guess. And this is what I've been trying to subtly say for the last 45 minutes or so. I held it together pretty well, so I'm pretty pleased with that. As I say, I had a few wobbles the other day watching some cutscenes and stuff. So
it's been fun. That I have cried my way through.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Thanks again, like, so much for having me on. Honestly, it's been
thank you.
Amazing to talk about her.
If people want to know more about, you know, what you got going on, where can they find you?
I mean, I guess just follow me on Twitter, on my main Twitter, which is K_D_B_, and I have a few other things going on, and I'll often share stuff on there. So yeah, come and find me on Twitter, and let's talk about the boss. I know, like, we have work and children, and then I'm like, why don't I just do another podcast and do this, that, and the other?
Respect for folks who can do more than one podcast, because just one keeps me on my toes, let me tell you.
Oh, I bet. Well, yeah, I love your podcast, and I look forward to hearing more episodes in the future.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. All you're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Pixel People podcast. Check out the show notes for links to the game and characters discussed, and to connect with me and my guest. Want to be a guest on the show? There's a link in the show notes for a short form you can fill out, and I'll reach out to you. A huge thank you to my patrons, especially my Tier 2 and 3 patrons, Red and Aperture Flash, and thank you to Elias Ali and Andy Brooks, who created the theme music. You can follow the show on Twitter at Pixel People Pod, and keep up with FireRider on Twitter, Twitch, and Discord. Enjoying the show? Be sure to subscribe, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I'd love it if you could leave a review. It helps more people find the show. See you next time.